Hello, listeners. I'd like to welcome you to Movie Boobs, a new podcast dedicated to speculation of both the Academy Awards and box office futures. In fact, that is how this podcast earned its name, with the B-O-O-B in boob standing for Box Office and Oscar Buzz. It can also represent its two hosts, who are indeed a pair of tremendous boobs, myself, Rob Laird, and my co-host, Paul Schmidt. So I apologize to any listeners who may have seen the name of this podcast and thought they'd be getting something dedicated to Mr. Skin or something. Sorry to disappoint. The good news is that Paul and I are real, and we are spectacular. We are real anyway, at least. So, Paul, just to give a little background here, Paul's a friend of mine. We go way back at about 10, 12 years or so. We worked together for many years, and we've been involved in some box office speculation and Oscar predicting for a number of years, and we decided that we'd go ahead and jump into creating this podcast for you. So, Paul, go ahead and introduce yourself here.
Hi, I'm Paul, and yeah, I've been doing this for a good long while with Rob. We were sort of we were doing fantasy movie leagues before they became in vogue, and this seems like a really good outlet to talk about the things that Rob and I tend to talk about every week anyway, so we may as well do it in a podcast rather than wearing out my Facebook Messenger app. So.
Yeah, in fact, I think it was it's Matt Berry from ESPN. He has developed a new fantasy movie league that he actually named FML for Fantasy Movie League. That is the name of our fantasy movie league we've had for almost 10 years now, so I feel like he's kind of or maybe I didn't trademark it soon enough. Maybe I should have jumped on it earlier. But now Matt Berry's kind of taken into it. But we were doing it even back in the Fantasy Moguls day. I don't know if anybody listening would remember that website. That's kind of the one that introduced me to this sort of new fantasy game. And that was run by Steve Mason, who I believe is a Hollywood writer now, or I should say a Hollywood reporter. Yeah, on the West Coast now, I believe he's still doing that. But at the time, he was doing reporting on box office speculation, and that was back in the mid to early aughts, and that's what kind of got us into it, and that's where we are now. But we're going to start our pilot podcast with a discussion about what will very soon be the biggest box office success in history, Star Wars The Force Awakens. Paul, I don't know if you saw this, but it had a $34.4 million Friday. And with that, you can kind of project that it's going to get very close to passing Avatar's $760 million record for domestic gross this weekend. And if it doesn't get it this weekend, it should get it Monday or Tuesday at the very latest. The only question now is, how high will it go? And, you know, I got to say, I'm certainly surprised by how quickly this has happened. What do you have anything to attribute this to, or I mean, obviously Star Wars, but what you got here for me?
Well, first off, I want to say I told you so, because we talked about this after we were starting to get some numbers back from those early Thursday night showings and the Friday debuts, and they were saying that first day was going to approach $125 million. And I told you, you thought where it would peak out was about $600 million, and I told you, I said, Rob, it's going to get to $600 million by New Year's Day, and gosh darn it, if it didn't do it.
Yeah.
I told you then, I thought $1 billion is in play. Now, I've softened on that a little bit. We've gotten to the 600 by New Year's Day, and it's going to blow past 760. But we're already down to probably $110 million weekends. I think it's going to run out of steam before it gets to $1 billion, but I think it's going to get close. I think we're looking at 950. I think we're looking at 975. And then, you know, you get a re-release around Oscar time. If it picks up some nominations, who the heck knows? We may have a shot at our first $1 billion picture. Now, you adjust that for inflation. I know that's something you wanted to talk about. That's somewhere I don't get into those types of numbers. I like looking at the real hard numbers in front of me, not adjusting Gone with the Wind for inflation and realizing it made like $75 billion if it was released today.
Well, really only 1.7. But but I do want to say, though, that I've actually done the reverse, changing softening a bit. I think it will get to $1 billion, and this is why. It's only dropping about 30% from its day-to-day totals from the previous week. For example, like the money it made on Thursday was only 30% less than it made the previous Thursday. Now, the kids are going back to school, starting on Monday, so we may see the weekdays start to really drop off significantly. But even if you bump that 30% drop off to 40 or 50%, a billion is certainly in play. A rule of thumb that I always use is whatever it makes in a weekend, that's about what it should make over the next 7 days. So if it makes $103 million this weekend, which is what it's on pace for, then it should make $107 million from Monday until Sunday. And if it does that, that'll put it at about $860 through next Sunday. And I think if it then it continues on with that sort of pace and dropping about 40%, it's going to get significantly over a billion, like almost a billion one.
Wow. So, and I think there's also, there's probably one more factor to this, and what I'm curious to see is how many people are actually like me. They haven't gotten my money yet. I'm not a huge Star Wars fan. I wasn't in the crush to go see it right away. But it's something I do want to go see. Right. I'm just kind of waiting for the fervor to calm down a little bit. And I know personally quite a few people that are actually waiting for the same thing. So, you know, there could be another several hundred thousand people out there that are still just kind of waiting this out till the crowds die down a little bit and are going to push the box office. Even maybe the holds are even going to be better than 30% coming from here on out, which would be ridiculous for this far into a release.
The fact that it's only dropping 30% a week is what's really alarming to me. I think this is the key week, this week coming up, between everybody's going back to school, people start getting back into the rhythm. These 2 weeks before New Year's are one great big weekend, I've always kind of considered. It's just a big weekend. And so when it ends, what's left, does it hold up? It has surpassed expectations in terms of how it holds up so far. If we anticipate that moving forward, I'm thinking it's going to end up in the 1.1 billion range, somewhere around there. That's where I'm putting it at, which is crazy. It's crazy. I mean, that's 150% what Avatar makes, just about, almost. So. It's just we haven't seen this before, and maybe we'll not see it again for the next 10-15 years, but it's something that's been amazing.
We could see it again this coming winter with the next release.
Right.
So I don't know about the next 10-15 years. It could be less than 12 months before we see it again.
I don't see it repeating itself like that. I don't. I do see it doing better than obviously the prequel trilogy, but yeah. We could probably talk about Star Wars and all of its records and everything for the next half hour, but we've got to move on. We've only got a half hour here, and there's a lot to discuss. Coming out over the course of the next 3 or 4 months, there are a slew of pretty big movies that are coming out, which is unusual for this time of year. We have Batman versus Superman, obviously. The latest Kung Fu Panda and Divergent movies are coming out. Deadpool, which has got the internet in a tizzy right now. And The Jungle Book. Paul, you and I have been involved in this box office speculation for about 9 years or so. We are currently witnessing the biggest year in box office history, referring to 2015. 2016, maybe not for the long haul quite as good, but it's shaping up pretty nicely. I can't remember a January-April pocket that was projected to do as well as this January-April pocket. Have you noticed anything about that as well? You kind of agree with me on that one?
I do, at least from the potential of the hits that we're looking at. I think people have, though, to a certain extent, tended to view that pocket as a Deadpool. And it's not. It's funny to think that, but it really isn't. January is awful, and I think that colors like the next 3 or 4 months. There's been a few years where there's been some pretty significant hits, and I'd have to go without going back and parsing through every single year. The one that sticks out in my mind, and it's only because I know I owned the movie that was crazy high grossing that year, was the year that the Oz the Great and Powerful came out. Wasn't that it? The Oz movie that had James right. Franco and mm-hmm. yeah, whatever the heck that was called. It was terrible. brought in $250 million. There was a Nicholas Sparks book that came out at Valentine's Day that brought in $140 million. But again, all after January. So I think people just kind of tend to lump those together. That year also, if I'm remembering correctly, I think there was a Hunger Games movie in that.
The very first Hunger Games came out in March. I believe it was 08. I don't remember. But it was...
We drafted that back at the Journal. So that wouldn't have been with the Oz movie. So that what I'm talking about was after that. You're right about that.
But the first Hunger Games did come out in March, and I think that's the best comp we have to Batman, Superman. I don't know if it's going to do $400 million like that Hunger Games movie did.
Sure.
And we'll discuss that Batman, Superman certainly here in a second as well. But yeah, January is typically the movie where they dump a bunch of bad horror movies that weren't good enough for Halloween. And sure. That's not the case this year. What's happened the last couple of years over this the 3-day weekend that we have in the middle of January is that's become Kevin Hart weekend. We get Kevin Hart movies. I think it was the first one that came out was Ride Along, and then last year it was Wedding something or other, Ringer, and then and then this year it's Ride Along 2. And they've both grossed very well. They've owned January. And the question though is what does Ride Along 2 make?
You know, I actually, there's two movies that you mentioned to me. I do like one of them to make $100 million, and it's actually Ride Along 2. I think that Kevin Hart's a real thing. I think Kevin Hart is kind of funny, and I actually enjoyed the first Ride Along. It was derivative. It wasn't super original. It was a buddy cop film, basically, but I thought it was well done, and I'll go watch Ice Cube do pretty much anything. So, you know, I actually go towards the other side of the ledger on that. It's not so much Kevin Hart for me, it's Ice Cube. I actually think he's a fun actor to watch on screen. He's somebody that you can tell really enjoys doing what he does, and I appreciate that. You know, I think it can get past 100. I don't know if it's going to blow it out of the water, and I think it's going to make less than the first Ride Along, but I don't think that 100 to 110 range is really out of the question.
Yeah, the first one made 115. There's no real good comp for this in terms of an R-rated comedy sequel that comes out in January. We don't really have anything for that. The question is this, you know, Ride Along 2 is going to be derivative of derivative, because I've seen the trailer. It looks like it's you know, a cash grab to me. But then again, I did laugh at the trailer, and I don't often laugh at trailers as I'm watching them on my computer. So, you know, it depends on that first weekend. If it can come wrest some money away from Star Wars and end up getting 35 to 40 million that opening weekend, it can get to 100. I see it floating in somewhere closer to 80 over its entire haul, but I've been wrong before. The other movies coming out in January, I think Kung Fu Panda's coming out in January. Panda 3.
Sell.
Yeah, that franchise has been beaten to death. The first one was such a breath of fresh air. I mean, it was really nice. I mean, it was just kind of a neat idea, and it was just it was actually kind of a good Kung Fu movie. And then they just beat that thing to death with the penguins and everything else. So, that's Madagascar. But they beat that thing to death with all the cartoons and everything else. So, I mean, they kind of hammered that one to death. But,
I didn't have kids yet when the first one came out, so I caught up to it later, and I actually saw the first one and the second one nearly back to back.
Yeah.
And boy, does that make the first one look really, really good in comparison.
Yes, it does.
You know, I think they just overestimated the need and the want for those jokes to basically be told a second time. And even my kids are like, yeah, whatever. Which is just, I mean, and they'll watch anything. They love Planes, too, for God's sake. So, you know, I mean, they're willing to suspend their disbelief for 2 hours on end, and even they were done with Kung Fu Panda after the first one. So, you know, I think that's just, you've got to understand what your brand is and what the lifeblood of your brand is. And the fact that they're coming back to do a third one is actually almost mind-boggling to me.
Right. they'll keep making them until they stop making money, I suppose. And this will be the one where it stops making money, I believe. I do want to talk about Deadpool just really quick. We're running out of time here. But Deadpool, the R-rated anti-superhero movie, is getting a lot of buzz. It's all over Twitter right now. The number I've been seeing on some box office guru sites are saying it could get to $175 million. What are your thoughts on this? Do you have any thoughts on the Deadpool movie?
Whole bunch of them. They can take my money.
Right.
Just take it all right now. I, first off, love Ryan Reynolds. I have loved Ryan Reynolds since Two Guys, a Girl, and the Pizza Place.
But he's not. Is he? He's not a box office draw, though.
I don't care. I like him. But no. But where I'm going with this is, I think he is. The role looks fantastic. He looks really funny. Now, you and I both know somebody who is a very big comic book fan who is in our movie league.
Right.
His name is Gary.
Yes.
And I work with Gary. I have spoken to Gary about this movie at length. The trailers to this movie make Gary furious.
Okay.
And I think I might actually be understating it a little bit. He is really upset with the direction this movie's taken and that they're turning it into one big joke. He doesn't mind it that it could be funny, but he's really not liking the direction this movie is taking. So, I think there's two ways this could go. If the loyalists think this is a slap in the face and they're just trying to make a big joke out of this story, people may not come out for it. On the other hand, this may really appeal to the mass audience, which went to Guardians of the Galaxy and just loved it because it was funny. So it could go one of two ways. I'm leaning towards it really pleasing the mass audience, and if that happens, I think you could have a surprise along the lines of Guardians of the Galaxy on your hands.
Yeah, I'm approaching this with some trepidation because of the R-rated tag on it, and you know, I tend not to get swept up in the tracking that you see on Twitter and Facebook because Snakes on a Plane went through the roof tracking on Twitter and Facebook, and it made like $15 million. So I tend to, you know, I take that with a grain of salt. I'm curious to see as we get closer what the buzz is. It's interesting to me that everybody's buying it right now and stocks is rising on it. So we'll see how that works out. Again, Batman, Superman, real quick. Like I said, I think the best comp for it is The Hunger Games, which finished at about $400. HXS has the price tag of Batman Superman at $360. Now, the HSX price is the first 4 weeks, how much they think the movie will make in the first 4 weeks, which is about 90% of its overall haul. So if you look at the price tag $360, what they're saying is it'll make about $400 or $396 at least in its overall haul. So right there along with Hunger Games. Is that about the right number, you think, for Batman Superman?
I lean closer to 3 than 4 on this.
Yeah.
And it's actually not the fault of the Batfleck. I actually could not hate Henry Cavill's Superman any more than I do. I think he always looks constipated. He really bugged me in the first Superman movie that he did. And the other thing, and I am a Batman guy. I'm going to go see this on opening night. I've seen every Batman movie that's been released on opening night, dating back to the first one with Jack Nicholson and Michael Keaton. I was like 11 years old. So I'm going to go see this movie on opening night. I'm prepared for it to annoy me because I don't understand why the Batman versus Superman thing even exists. Because these are two people that should be allies, and the story wants to pit the man against the superhero. And it's never made sense to me that someone could win in that situation.
Right.
I'm getting into a whole discussion I don't want to get into. The concept annoys me. I don't particularly laugh. There's another movie that Batman is going to be in that I cannot wait to see. It's The Suicide Squad. That's later in the year.
Yes.
Far more excited about that than I am about Batman versus Superman.
Yeah, I don't think you're the only one. And you talked about Deadpool's trailer is kind of infuriating Gary. I think a lot of people are getting infuriated by the Batman Superman trailers. I don't think there was a lot of good vibe coming out of those trailers either. So, moving on though to the OB portion of our podcast for the last 5 minutes or so, we'll kind of breeze through it this week, and we'll certainly get more into it next week as the nominations approach. But it's kind of muddled this year. certainly with the Golden Globes coming out and with Vegas now releasing their sort of favorites and other award ceremonies, kind of giving their nominations and victories out, the picture's starting to take place a little bit. And something that we can determine from that is that Spotlight looks to be a pretty sizable favorite at this point. Others in the running, The Revenant, Joey Carroll, The Martian, all are looking to be pretty good shape for Best Picture. Anything else? And what other movies do we see as possibly coming up for Best Picture nominations?
You hit on one of them in your notes here, and I've got another one to add as well. You hit on Trumbo.
Yes.
Which, love me some Trumbo. I actually think Room gets into the nominations. I think the concept was too good, and I think, and we're going to get to some discussion on that in a little bit too, but I think the performances were too great for that not to get nominated. From the box office stars, though, I think there's one spot for either Star Wars or a movie like Mad Max, which was critically acclaimed but came out earlier in the year. I don't think both could get nominations. Do you?
No, and that's something that's an interesting point, because when they jumped from five nominations to as many as 10 nominations a few years ago, I kind of thought that was the Dark Knight effect, where that movie didn't get nominated but it should have, and and the Academy wanted to draw some interest into the award ceremony by maybe getting some more audience friendly movies. If that's the case, then you can't have nine artsy movies like Joy and Carol getting nominations. You've got to have something. The Martian might play that role. What's getting a lot of traction right now is Mad Max. It is getting nominated for Best Picture in all the award ceremonies we've seen. It's getting a ton of nominations. I believe that carries over into the Oscars. And I think that takes the Star Wars nom. I don't see Star Wars getting nominated. But I do see Trumbo, and I'll tell you why, and we've talked about this over the years.
Yes, we
Nobody
have.
Loves the smell of their own farts more than the Academy, and any movie about movies that's any good is going to get nominated. Nothing's a better example of that than Argo, which had no business winning Best Picture that year, but it did.
Yeah, if you want a dark horse to win it this year, if you can get good odds on it,
yeah.
Bet on Trumbo.
Yeah, yeah.
Do it.
Yeah.
And it's actually very, very good.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt that it's a good movie. It's probably a better movie than Argo is, to be honest with you.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. One more dark horse for you. Just call it a hunch.
Okay.
I don't think it gets a nomination, but I'm throwing it out there. Creed.
Okay.
I just a hunch.
My hunch is The Big Short. It's getting a lot of traction lately. It's getting some late momentum. It's kind of a different movie. I don't think, because it's so odd and it breaks the fourth wall and it does all these weird things, I don't think it has any shot at getting the actual victory. But I do think that it's kind of derivative, because there's been a ton of movies about the Wall Street stuff over the years. But I think it's different enough and good enough. I think it does get a nomination. Real quick before we end this show, I do think, as we move on to Best Actor here, I think this is the year for Leo. He's got some competition with Michael Fassbender, but Steve Jobs was just not, it didn't get the panache behind it that was supposed to. Eddie Rainman, in a weird movie, The Danish Girl, is kind of a weird movie. I don't see him getting a win for that role. Bryan Cranston and Trumbo might be interesting. And Johnny Depp for Black Mass is the last sort of favorite to get nominated, but I don't see any of those guys aside from Cranston giving Leo a push for this. Do you?
Honestly, I think if it's going to be somebody, it's going to be Cranston or Johnny Depp, who was fantastic in Black Mass.
Okay.
A little bit of a mess of a movie. It ended up not being as good of a movie as I think people thought it was going to be, but he was amazing in that movie. He was Whitey Bulger. It was great. As far as the performance goes.
But, I mean, it's kind of been a while since it came out.
Yeah, exactly. And it has been. There's the other problem. I mean, it has been for Trumbo and for Jobs, too, quite frankly. The thing about The Revenant is, it is such a screwball movie.
It's dark. Like,
it's dark, except it finishes light.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know how the movie ends, but if it ends the same way the story does,
mm-hmm.
he doesn't kill the people at the end. I hope that's not a spoiler alert to people listening. The source material, he tracks these people down and then lets them go. He meets them, confronts them, and says, see you later. Which, to me, for a whole movie based on revenge, I don't know. This whole movie as a follow-up project for Iñárritu is to Birdman is either the most appropriate or like the most crazy thing that he possibly could have done. And I waffle on that day to day. I'm just baffled by this movie. And I think that this can lead to a discussion on later podcasts. The Revenant in particular is one of these movies that has a lot of people rethinking why we're nominating performances and why we're nominating movies for Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Actress. Mm-hmm. Because there's such a formula to it.
Yeah.
And you know, I think we're getting to a point now where maybe we're trying to break out of that formula a little bit. And I think The Revenant's maybe adhering to a little bit more of the older formula.
Best Actress, you talked about Room a little bit earlier being a really well-done movie. It seems like, to me, Brie Larson isn't quite the favorite for Best Actress that Leo is for Best Actor, but in my mind, I think she's a bigger lock. Her performance in Room pretty much carried that movie. I don't see Cate Blanchett winning again this early. Saoirse Ronan for Brooklyn, I don't know if she's got enough juice behind her. Jennifer Lawrence, I don't think she's going to get another win that early. And there's nobody really out there for Best Actress besides that group? Do you? Uh-huh. I mean, I think Brie Larson's it, right?
Yeah, I do. There's two problems here. Going through those nominations, the best performance might actually be Carey Mulligan. She was a force in Suffragette, but that movie came out so long ago and got very little critical praise outside of her performance.
Right.
That's going to be tough. I think people are starting to get sick of seeing Jennifer Lawrence and David O. Russell movies, so I don't think she's got a shot, honestly.
Yeah.
I think your dark horse in this is Saoirse Ronan, be your second nomination. And by all accounts, I have not seen Brooklyn. By all accounts, everything I've heard and read is she's a force. She's a phenomenal performer in this movie. I give Cate Blanchett a lot more of a chance than you do, simply because everybody, and now granted, for people that don't know, I live in Chicago. I live in on the north side. I live in a neighborhood that tends to, we'll say, they would appreciate source material for Carol. Mm-hmm. The Price of Salt is the book, a little bit more than some of more red state America might. I'll leave it like that. But just the source material of Carol being as good as it is, and the movie being as powerful to a lot of people as it is, I think there's a pretty good shot Cate Blanchett could win this.
I can see that, because if you look at Jennifer Lawrence and Joy, that movie was kind of the feedback on that movie, the critical sort of response from it seems to be that movie was kind of not really that terrific aside from being a Jennifer Lawrence vehicle.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, Carol's just a terrific movie, and Cate Blanchett's performance in it is very good as well. So, possible. I still think that Brie Larson's your horse there.
The one thing I would say is, I think there's other people that could have been in Carol. I think any number of people could have done what Jennifer Lawrence did. Can't picture anybody other than Brie Larson from Room. I just can't. And to me, that's what gives her the award.
Yeah, and with that, we are running perilously short on time here, so I will thank all of you who chose to listen to this first installment of Movie Boobs. We hope that you'll come back next week when we'll update the Star Wars Juggernaut. We'll give more predictions for the early 2016 slate and discuss the potential Oscar nominations, maybe for the supporting categories and the screenplay categories, things like that. In the meantime, please subscribe to this podcast to receive reminders of future episodes. You may also join our Facebook group at www.facebook.com/groups/movieboobs. That would be a good place to leave questions, or you can email us at movieboobs@mail.com. That's movieboobs@mail.com. Thanks again for listening.
M-A-I-L for everybody listening
yes.
at home, not M-A-L-E.
Correct, and there's no G, it's not Gmail. That surprisingly, movieboobs@gmail.com is already taken, so I dare not wonder who has that email address, but Thanks again for listening, everybody. For my co-host Paul Schmidt, I'm Rob Laird, and we are Two Movie Boobs.